The lady protests too much, methinks, or maybe not enough. Audiences can now watch a parallel retelling of Hamlet from Ophelia and Gertrude's perspectives. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A new play called A Room in the Castle is based on the women of Hamlet. Joining me in this recorded conversation to talk about this retelling of one of Shakespeare's most popular works is playwright Lauren Gunderson. Thanks so much for being here, Lauren.
Oh, such a joy. Thanks for having me.
Tell me the origin story of this play. Why Hamlet from the perspective of these women?
You know, I have loved Shakespeare since I was in middle school and would act out scenes from Caesar and Romeo and Juliet in my bedroom. And as I found my way to becoming a playwright, you know, that dedication and curiosity and sort of entanglement with the bard never really left me. And so it leads me to this moment now where, you know, so many plays later, I've had a good two-decade career in the theater so far, and I have never spent as much time with Hamlet as I have on this play, which is one of my favorite plays. It's so well constructed. It's so iconic. But there are holes in the play that even as a young girl, I could see. And like, what's going on with Ophelia? How does she get from the beginning of the play to later in the, where she, you know, loses her mind, and what is going on with Gertrude? And so this was a chance for me to explore that and say, there's always some other part of the story that we might be missing, and I wanted to tell it.
And without giving too much away, can you explain just briefly the story that your play tells?
Yes. So this is a play that follows the same chronology as Shakespeare's Hamlet, but from the women's perspective. So we see Gertrude and Ophelia and her lady's maid named Anna. And basically, at the moment that the ghost first arrives in Shakespeare's Hamlet, we follow these women throughout all of the scenes that don't have Hamlet in it. and we basically use that as a way to explore what's going on behind the scenes. And it's called A Room in the Castle because that's the only place where these women can be honest and not put on a show for the men. And so they can really tell us what's truly in their hearts, what's it like to have this wild man running around Denmark, specifically in this place, that putting them in danger. And so we find a way for these women to start out as sort of not enemies, but antagonists to each other, or certainly don't understand each other or using each other, to becoming a sisterhood. That is this coalition to try to survive the madness of men. And they do in some parts.
Hamlet is such a beloved and well-known work. There have been other takes on it, of course, going back to Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Was it at all daunting to take this on?
Oh my gosh, yes, of course. Just the greatest work in Western literature. It's fine. It was such fun, though, because the characters are so well drawn, and yet there is still more there. So the interesting thing is, this is not so much of a spoiler, but this is an experiment in how do we save Ophelia? And part of that is there are breadcrumbs left in the text that are curious when you sort of look at them, and left me a lot of room to imagine that there was this alternate version where the body in the ground that we see is not actually Ophelia. And Shakespeare does this amazing thing, which is curious, except if you're me trying to write a play and need this, where this there's a very famous speech of Gertrude describing Ophelia's death by drowning. And it occurred to both Brian Phillips, the artistic director of Cincinnati Shakes, who, when he commissioned this, this was the conversation we had. Both of us thought that that speech is beautifully written, but also a little strange. Why would the queen have such a detailed description of this young woman's drowning and not do anything about it? Why did you not go in and get her? Why did you not stop her? So it seems a bit performative, which got me down to an idea of maybe it is performative. Maybe Gertrude is putting on the show so that Ophelia can have a chance at a new and free life outside of Denmark.
Wow. You think Shakespeare was leaving room for a sequel?
You know, why not? He's smart on numerous levels.
So why, you talked about Cincy Shakes and kind of the collaboration there, why was it so important to you all to give voice to these women when Shakespeare didn't really give them all that much to say in Hamlet?
Well, that's exactly why. You know, it is always a chance to investigate what are the women doing in any literature, in any history, in any philosophy. And it is not that it discounts what struggle and curiosity there are for men. But there's something perhaps different and deeper that we can go if we look at the people usually excluded from these stories. So centering these women and putting them together is the thing that feels the most exciting and resonant. And this was such a gift to have Cincy Shakes and Brian champion this idea and let me play with one of the greatest plays ever known, you know, on the home turf, right? This is a Shakespeare company. So it's pretty radical and amazing to think about a Shakespeare company dedicated to classics to invest like this in a new play. It's such an honor and such a thrill.
We're talking in this recorded interview about the new play, A Room in the Castle, a parallel retelling of Hamlet from Ophelia and Gertrude's perspectives. What I loved about your play is you're not only giving these women voice, you give them agency and depth and dimension. Was that a goal of yours going into this project?
Oh, absolutely. I imagine Ophelia not as the frail, mad young woman we see at the end of the play, but followed through again with the breadcrumb Shakespeare left of her musical interest. Throughout the play, she is singing and quoting song. And so it led me to think, well, maybe she's like a young Taylor Swift in her room writing songs, trying to be an artist in a world that does not want her to do anything like that. So we plant her in that space. She's writing songs when we meet her. And that song, of course, about love is about Hamlet in the beginning of the play and is about herself at the end of the play. But it's also about the family we choose, the family that we become that isn't necessarily blood related. So her lady's maid, Anna, is so much more than that. She is a maternal figure. And it reminds me of how many times women who are not the birth mothers of people still become maternal and mother the people all around them, which is the same with Gertrude. It is interesting, too, the play that I thought I was writing at the beginning of the commissioning process was about Ophelia. I've always had this beef, you know, there's more there. Why does she have such a thin arc in the latter half of the play? Why does she have to die? But in the writing of it, I actually found myself incredibly drawn to understanding and unpacking Gertrude. I am a mother. I have two sons. And the idea of what motherhood allows us to feel and also costs us. It became so sharp when I started to look at Gertrude and imagine her too as not the sort of lusty second wife of the play that Hamlet accuses her of, but of being somebody incredibly strategic, doing things for her son, for her family, for her country that other people wouldn't do. That in fact, let's think of her as being entirely brilliant in these moves and not self-serving and bawdy. And that unlocked something very deep and very real about what motherhood is and what it is to look at a child and of yours and think, I don't know if they're a good person or not. And what do I do? And frankly, does it matter if they are? I'm still going to love them till the end of my time on earth. So it was a really interesting and complex story to write that was much deeper than I thought it was at the beginning.
I'm a mom too, and I thought that nuanced portrait of motherhood really came through so beautifully in your play.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. When I first heard about your play, and I hope this doesn't insult you, I thought of the musical Six, which I love, where the six wives of Henry VIII reclaim their stories so they're more than just one of his wives. And last fall, the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company did a production of Frankenstein, which was kind of a play within a play from the perspective of Mary Shelley. Do you think there's a growing effort to kind of recenter classic works and histories from perspectives that we haven't considered as much in the past or that haven't been presented to us as much in the past?
Oh, I think that's so true. And I find that trend active as well. I'm part of it. I love it because classics are the thing that is so grounding and really unite a lot of audiences and readers. But there is so much there, and allowing people to iterate and explore and challenge. I sort of think of this play as sort of dancing with Shakespeare, not replacing or insulting, but moving with something we love very much and finding new ways to understand it and come to see it.
Your script is beautiful. I mean, even reading it, I almost felt like I could see the performances in my mind, just reading your words. Can you read a passage for us?
Absolutely, yes. So this is a passage from the middle of the play. Gertrude, Anna, and Ophelia are finally able to relax a bit in Ophelia's room. They have privacy and they are able to be honest. And Gertrude has this speech about why she doesn't want to be happy. So Gertrude says, "This is why I don't like being happy." Ophelia says, "What's wrong with being happy?" Anna says, "Nothing is wrong with being happy. That's how happy works." Gertrude says, "No, no, no. What I mean is that happy is what they promise women to keep us quiet. Be happy with music lessons and dresses and dolls, all things designed to keep you silent and busy and shut up indoors. You can excel at those things, but you are inherently excelling in a box that they made you, and you never get out, no matter how beautiful or perfect you are. So I told myself as a girl, don't ever be happy. Be satisfied. Be content. Be at rest between fabulous bouts of good work. Be merry. Be boisterous. But don't waste your life on happiness. That serves them, not you."
I just found that so powerful. I mean, where did that come from? I mean, I think so many people can relate to that sentiment. What inspired that for you?
You know, it's a bit of a mystery to myself sometimes when I look back at plays, thinking about how on earth did that occur to me. But it's part of the contrast between these characters. Ophelia is young and hopeful and, you know, naive, but in a sort of beautiful, bright way. And Gertrude has weathered a lot and sees the hard parts of life and the darker parts. And so in contrast, we would assume that somebody would say, "Of course you like being happy." As Anna says, that's what happy means. But Gertrude has a different perspective on it. She is such an intellect that feeling doesn't matter to her as much. But it also allows her to kind of say a strange thing, like, who doesn't want to be happy? But it allows her to confess more complexity to her story. She wants an amazing life. She wants to matter and do great, big, important things. But to her, that's not about being happy. That is, as she says, you know, be at rest, be content. Happiness is for fools. And, you know, she's not wrong in that way. Like every character in this play is wrong and right pretty much all the time in different ways at different scenes.
Yeah, that feels very human.
Indeed.
Yeah. In a play like this that you've written, what's the balance between honoring Shakespeare and the original work and bringing a new perspective and voice to it so it feels familiar and new all at the same time?
Thank you for asking that. You know, I wanted to make sure that the most diehard Shakespeare fan/nerd would see actually no problems with my interpretation. It matches up. It aligns with Hamlet exactly. It just allows for a slightly different version of events that, again, does not change what happens in Hamlet, actually doesn't have as much to do with it. So I wanted them to align perfectly. But, you know, it also allows us to say that just because Hamlet says something is true and something has become iconic, like a to be or not to be speech, doesn't mean that Ophelia can't have a different perspective. And she does. There's a moment where the play sort of breaks, where Ophelia sees us in the audience and realizes, oh, this is what Hamlet has. He has access to the audience. He talks to them. And it's this moment that was kind of meta-theatrical in a delightful way. I love writing stuff like that. But my favorite part of it, and it was the last part of the play that I actually wrote, the sort of newest part, where she says, you know, he gets to talk to them, but if they heard from us, my goodness, what truths they would know. And Anna says, well, what truths is that? And she says, that question that he asks, the answer is always to be. So it allows her to both say, I see this, you know, the history and the literature that we come from, but there is another version, which is, that's not a real question. The answer is right there. It's obvious, which I love that how that allows me to dance with the wonder that is Shakespeare.
What kind of time do you invest in something like this? I mean, clearly you've been a fan of Shakespeare for many years. You've been a playwright for many years. What kind of investment of time does it take to create something like this?
You know, it goes in bursts. I get so excited about something that I generate a first draft rather quickly. That can be done in a matter of weeks. Something like this, though, also because I wanted it to be so bulletproof in terms of how it fits exactly with Shakespeare. It meant reading a lot of Hamlet again and again, seeing the film adaptations, any performance of Hamlet nearby. I would jump to see the show at a theater. I saw a fantastic version at one of my local Shakespeare companies, Santa Cruz Shakes. It's amazing. So, you know, it takes a lot of going over and over. So that first draft can come quickly, and then it's workshop after workshop and reading after reading. And we started to develop this during the pandemic. So there was a lot of Zoom readings before we could be in place. And then it all changes that first day of rehearsal when we have our actual cast and we get to hear these words in their particular voices. And my amazing visionary director, Kaya Dunn, has done such a marvelous job of making this play true to what I wanted, but also true to what she thinks and I agree is necessary in the world, and making this such an important story for women of all kinds, and also for men. It is a play that, you know, all of my plays are generally categorized as, you know, these are plays about women, centering women, but those stories are as universal as Hamlet is, because there's so much more that we share as people than divides us. So I like the idea that these women are every people, not just women, not just a story for women, by women, but for all of us.
Sure. And everybody has a mom.
That's exactly right.
What kind of response have you gotten from audiences to this play? And how much does that even matter to you?
It matters so much. And also it can't matter. But the truth is, I write for myself, not as a writer or an actor in another life, but as an audience member. That's why I love this art form, is because I started in those seats and I return to that every time I think, what should I write? What is funny and moving? It's me as an audience member, not me as a writer first. So I sort of like to think that I think as an audience. But what has been most exciting, and you know, it's a play about the tragedy of the Prince of Denmark, and we think it's going to be very heavy. And the truth is, it functions as a pretty riotous comedy for most of the play until about halfway through, when we shift into this dance between what is funny because it is brazen and what is brazen because it is so true. And now we need to turn into survival and resilience. But the beginning of the play is silly and fun and girlish with Ophelia, and very snappy and sassy with this powerful queen telling everyone what to do. And Anna is so insightful and can kind of call people out in the way that those who aren't in power but see everything can. So it's actually quite bubbly and delightful in that way. So I think that's been the thing that's been most true, is that when it actually functions like a comedy, we get uproarious laughter, you know. And I think maybe audiences are a bit surprised that they think, I thought we were seeing Hamlet. Why am I laughing so much? Which is a great compliment, for sure.
What's next for you as a writer? Do you think you'll take on another Shakespeare classic?
Funny you ask that. I am in Florida right now in a new play workshop, working on a brand new play called Lady Disdain, which is my riff on Much Ado About Nothing. So can't stop, won't stop with Shakespeare.
Well, good for you. I can't wait to hear more about that one. I'm sure if it's anything like this one, I'm sure it's terrific.
Oh, thank you so much. We're having a great time.
Well, I've been talking with playwright Lauren Gunderson. Her new play, A Room in the Castle, is playing through February 9th at Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. You can find details on our website, wvxu.org. Thank you so much for your time today, Lauren. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.